Chapter 7. All words lead to potent messaging. Our business is infested with idiots who try to impress by using pretentious jargon. David Ogilvy. When baited to criticize Trump's view on Russia in the Michigan debate on March 3, John Kasich didn't bite. Instead, he said, "Let me take you around the world, okay?" Then in a handful of soundbites, he covered how he would handle relationships with Russia, China, and the Middle East. It was impressive to hear him share his deep expertise, but he wasted his precious time. Not once did he bring us back to his messaging. Trump is just the opposite. He skirts the details and always comes back to his messaging. Do you see what's implied in his approach, by the way? Yes, I'm sure you do. That by sounding smart, he'll impress people and they'll elect him president. Right, so by having smart soundbites on the state of the world, his brain thinks, oh, people will say, wow, that guy's just so worldly and intelligent, we need him as president. But it doesn't work that way. And you can track that problem back to our school system, where we're mostly graded on our ability to sound smart and to repeat what somebody else has already told us. Versus actually, what is deep influence, John Kasich? And that's what Trump has mastered. He goes straight to the message. Consider in that same debate when Donald was aggressively challenged by Ted Cruz for being part of the corruption in Washington, in particular for supporting liberal Democrats for 4 decades, from Jimmy Carter to John Kerry to Hillary Clinton. Quickly, Trump reframed. I have been supporting people for many years, and these people have been politicians, and they have been on both sides. I've supported everybody. Then, while using one of his favorite patterns of influence, external validation, Trump redirected to his messaging and solution. A recent article said that Donald Trump is a world-class businessman who does get along with everybody. Part of the problem we have in Washington is nobody gets along. We need to be able to get things done. Again, look what Donald did. He took an accusation against his character and quickly redirected it to one of his campaign messages. Our leaders are incompetent, and I will get things done. Do you see the depth of that? Well, let's go back through it and talk about it a little more. How would most people defend that sort of attack? They would defend themselves, wouldn't they? Well, I supported them for this reason. Or I didn't really support them. Or I bribe politicians because I'm a businessman, which he's kind of said over and over. Yet what did he do? He talked about supporting everybody. And then he used that idea to drive into the notion that it's a bit of a non sequitur, isn't it? We need to be able to get things done. And what about how he started that second part of it? A recent article said that Donald Trump is a world-class businessman. Notice again this device of external validation. He's not saying, listen, I'm a world-class businessman and I support everybody. Just by citing that recent article, what article? Did it really happen? Doesn't matter, does it? Because as a device of influence, he's just using it to keep directing towards his messaging. Donald is constantly bringing us back to his messaging. Unfortunately for his rivals, they didn't get the memo. His rivals have weak messaging. The other candidates on the trail lack the potent slogans of Donald's, "We don't win anymore," and "Make America Great Again." Where is their unique messaging that they keep driving to bring us along with their campaign? Kasich for us. What? Come on. Governor Kasich's website led with balancing budgets, cutting taxes $5 billion, helping Americans create jobs. Impressive, right? But can you imagine a crowd roaring? Let's balance some budgets! Let's balance some budgets! Rubio went with a new American century. What? What does that even mean? And this one, Marco Mentum is real. Think about what that implies, by the way, that people don't think it's real. So he has to tell them it's real. On his home page, Rubio had a testimonial saying, wait for it, I don't see Marco Rubio as anything other than a legitimate, full-throated conservative. Try screaming that at your next rally. We love Marco's full throat. What about Ted Cruz's? Join the movement of courageous conservatives. What does that even mean? Does it take courage to vote for Cruz? Courage to be a conservative? Here we saw two GOP frontrunners trying to outcompete each other on their conservative credentials. Hardly a winning strategy, if recent history is any indication, let alone a unique message for voters to rally behind. Of course, this isn't a new problem for Republicans. What were Mitt Romney's and John McCain's campaign messages? Quick, what were they? I don't know. They weren't quite as memorable as Obama's Yes We Can, Hope and Change, were they? But it's a new field of Democrats in 2016, and they've not excelled at messaging either. As we covered earlier, Hillary's messaging is self-centered and lacks a message that we can all rally behind. And while the burn is close to building a movement with his messaging, a future to believe in, his words still lack the oomph of Trump's. Not messaging, influencing. Inside Trump's two rally cries, we don't win anymore, and make America great again, lies an invisible source of influence. Both phrases capture a simple truth, but powerfully motivate us in different ways. We don't win anymore appeals to people who are sick of how it has been, appealing to negative emotions like frustration and anger. Make America great again appeals to people who dream of how they want it to be, appealing to positive emotions like hope and belief. So, whether you are motivated away from problems or towards solutions, what's called your motivational direction, Donald is hunting you out. Bernie's A Future to Believe In tries to hit you from both motivational directions at the same time, but it fails to strongly land on either. Also, his more clinical words, dissociated words such as A, rather than say we, give his rally cry less emotional resonance and less punch, lessening its impact as a device of influence. Try it for yourself if you doubt it. Try screaming, A Future to Believe In. Now do the same with words like Make America Great Again. Or even A Future We Can Believe In. Or A Future for Us All. On a basic, primitive level, Trump's messaging is better. But that's only the first layer. Layer upon layer of messaging. Beyond his rally cries, Trump has built layers of messaging that he consistently comes back to. I say it all the time. We don't have victories anymore. We used to have victories. We used to be great. My whole theme is make America great. Again. This from one of Trump's campaign speeches in Las Vegas could be extracted from almost any of his speeches. Even here, where Trump spoke off the cuff for some 45 minutes, he kept circling back to his messaging. After asserting his two rally cries, Trump dropped down one more level into two of his secondary messages. First, you can't be great if you don't have a border. And second, you can't be great if China has taken all of our jobs. Do you see what he's doing here? That even though his words often sound like random bluster, which by the way they are, aren't they? They are peppered with messaging. It's like if you go into my public speaking natural masterclass, what you see is a notion called messaging pyramids, which says know your messaging, write them out from the most dominant down the tree, and then just layer them into your speech. So instead of having a flowery script that sounds nice, what you have, hypnotists might call a word salad, random words, but just peppered, punctuated with messaging, so that all that sticks is those random words just fall away, just like nearly every speech that every politician gets, random words that fall away, and what's left in Trump's is the messaging, deeply embedded in your mind. All right, let's go back to the book. While drifting into these topics, Donald kept reinforcing some of his tertiary messaging, such as, our leaders are incompetent. I'm different than them. I solve problems. We must get rid of our debt. Like smothering a cake with icing, Trump is masterful at stacking layer upon layer of messaging. And he should be. He's been talking about the same topics for a long time. Listen to what he said to Oprah back in 88. Something's going to happen over the next number of years with this country, because you can't keep going on losing over $200 billion. And yet we let Japan come in and dump everything right into our markets. It's not free trade. If you go to Japan right now and try to sell something, forget about it, Oprah. They just make it impossible. Sound familiar? And beyond the layers of messaging that Trump is using to drive his campaign, he has one message that is always riding shotgun. Winning. Late last year, my fellow Aussie Simon Reynolds, a marketer, author, and mentor to business leaders, wrote about Trump's branding. For better or worse, Donald Trump's positioning is super clear. He is synonymous with brazen success and wealth. The Trump brand has always stood for winning, and he is constantly reminding us of it. How many times in this campaign have you heard Trump use the word win? In the New Hampshire debate, after he came up short in Iowa and went back to his messaging with a vengeance, Trump began his closing remarks with, our country that we love so much doesn't win anymore. We don't win with the military. We don't win on the border. He ended with, if I'm elected president, we will win, and we will win, and we will win. That is six wins in three sentences. Over nearly 50 years, Trump has built a business and personal brand around the concept of winning. And he is heavily relying on the brand to convince Americans that he can do the same for the country. And with his skillfulness at redirecting attention back to his layers of messaging, he in fact did win. From all the way out there? In the first debate, Trump was challenged about his business record because Trump Corporations has declared bankruptcy four times. After establishing the fact, moderator Chris Wallace asked Trump, with that record, why should we trust you to run the nation's business? Tough question. How did Trump respond? Because I have used the laws of this country, just like the greatest people that you read about every day in business have used the laws of this country to do a great job for my company, for myself, for my employees, for my family. Notice again the use of that external validation, citing the greatest people. And notice again, he took the direct accusation against his business record and created a new frame. Namely, I use the law like other great people. Something else in here that we'll be talking about later is Donald's use of repetition. Use the laws of this country, he used twice in the same sentence. As he did with the notion of greatest people, which he then attributed to himself and the great job he's done. Back to the book. Then quickly, he reframed again. Like he did with that woman problem question from Megyn Kelly, shrinking the problem down to size. Out of hundreds of deals that I've done, hundreds, on four occasions, I've taken advantage of the laws of this country, like virtually every person that you read about on the front page of the business sections. Again, Trump told us he is in great company. He defended his turf with the strength of his superlatives and finished by reminding us yet again, I've built a net worth of more than $10 billion. I have a great, great company. I employ thousands of people, and I'm very proud of the job I did. Again, Chris, hundreds and hundreds of deals. Four times I've taken advantage of the laws, and frankly, so has everybody else in my position. Again, notice these same themes repeated over and over and over again. Just stacking his messaging, layer upon layer. But Wallace didn't give up that easily. Citing one particular case in which lenders lost more than $1 billion, he asked Trump,
"Is that the way you'd run the country?"
To which Trump replied, "Well, let me tell you about the lenders. First of all, these lenders aren't babies. These are total killers. These are not the nice, sweet little people that you think, okay? You're living in a world of the make-believe, Chris." Wow. See what he did again? He sidestepped the frame, the massive accusation about his business record, that he's filed bankruptcy, that he's let down lenders. At first, he goes deep into repeating over and over again that he's a great businessman using the laws of the country. And then look at the way he turned it here. Sidesteps the frame, inserts an entirely new frame. The lenders aren't babies. And even threw in an ad hominem attack on Wallace, suggesting he lives in the world of the make-believe. From here, Trump kept moving towards his messaging. First, he told a story about how he was smart enough to leave Atlantic City early, ending with, "I made a lot of money in Atlantic City, and I'm very proud of it. I want to tell you that, very, very proud of it." Finally, even after the buzzer rang, Trump injected, "By the way, this country right now owes $19 trillion, and they need somebody like me," pointing to himself. All words lead to potent messaging. Okay, so let's hit three combat points from this chapter. First, Donald drives potent messaging, but perhaps the worst part of his rival's campaign was that they didn't. See, in an equal battle, one person is going to show up with great messaging and skill in driving it, and so too is the other. And then they're going to see who's got better messaging, and on many levels, who's a better candidate. It's like watching two unevenly matched boxers, a 120-pound weakling versus Muhammad Ali. Right, so Muhammad Ali may have been a great boxer, yet what happens when an equally great boxer shows up? And so, even though as we walk through Trump's messaging, it becomes obvious, or it is obvious, that he had the best slogans, and he was very good at the way he deployed the rest of his messaging, what's most apparent from the way Trump thumped his competition was how terrible they were at developing, let alone actually driving their own messaging. It is completely reprehensible that they didn't even have slogans. Right, so few of the candidates even had a worthy slogan, let alone one that was good enough for Donald's. And that's where you see we really won. The other candidates were barefoot at best. Combat point two. A slogan is only the starting point. The messaging is the next point. But what really matters is, do you have an entire deck of messaging? And can you climb up and down the stack? See, if you model out Trump's messaging, you'll see what? Take his core slogan, we don't win anymore. And then if you drew a kind of decision tree structure underneath it, what I call a messaging pyramid, you'd have a handful of messages there. We don't win in the military. We don't win at the borders. We don't win in the economy. We don't win in trade against China. But doesn't it just seem so freaking obvious? Right? This is all he did over and over again. Yet try and lay that out for Hillary. What was that? I'm with her. Okay. So what's some of the messaging underneath that? I'm a woman. We want our first woman president. Okay, what else? What about one of her kind of messages? Better together. Okay. How does that stack out? So you see again, and I'm not being mean, what I'm saying is, if you do your job and you have a great slogan, that's one thing. But then you want a whole deck of messaging and to be highly skilled at the way you deploy it. Point three. And this is where you really see the power of Trump's ideas coming together. In the previous chapter, we talk about verbal jujitsu and how specifically he was able to reframe things and lead to messaging. And that's where you see this really moving to. Is it's one thing to be able to dance around ideas and be expert at reframing, at stealing frames, at redirecting frames, at blowing frames up. Yet, it's incredibly powerful when you can then direct it towards your messaging. To pick one of potentially many examples, let's go back to the Megyn Kelly woman comment. He blew up that frame, directed it towards political correctness, directed it towards the country doesn't have time for this. We have serious problems. And so you see, he takes this accusation against him and very skillfully, very fast, then directs that towards his messaging. And anyone taking on Trump not only wants to be expert at the way that they come up with messaging, again, it's embarrassing how terrible a job the candidates in 16 did just at having a slogan, let alone having a high-quality set of messaging, let alone being highly skilled at the way that they drove towards their messaging.